Second hour, Darren, Donick, and Chase here on this Tuesday morning. Hope everybody's having a good day. We always enjoy our conversations with our next guest, Joel Corey, CBS Sports. Does a really good job of talking about contracts, free agency, and Titans general manager John Robinson has some really, really tough decisions to make this offseason. Joel, how you doing?
I'm doing fine. How about yourself?
Oh, we're doing fantastic. We don't have to make the tough decisions, so it's easy for us. But we're not envious of what John Robinson's going to have to tackle this offseason because, you know, you can't pay everybody and you can't give everybody a new shiny contract. So let's start with the two guys at the top. I think everybody can agree that Derrick Henry and Ryan Tannehill are the most important guys that they're going to have to address. Let's start with Derrick Henry, who is the most popular player on the team, NFL leading rusher this year. How do you go about trying, and everybody knows the stigma attached to that position and what's happened in the league over the last 3 years or so with those big contracts. For the most part, it really hasn't worked out. So how do you go about trying to find that right number for Derrick Henry, in your opinion?
Well, fortunately, the last year the CBA, provided there isn't a new one, allows for you to use a franchise tag and a transition tag. So I suspect the Titans will put a tag on both if there aren't new deals worked out. I'd stick a transition tag on Henry for a little over, right around $8.5 million, and let the market dictate what the deal is, and you decide whether you want to match that. Last year we saw Le'Veon Bell had one suitor, and it only takes one, to pay him something that the Jets now have buyer's remorse about. Personally, I wouldn't pay any running back big money on a second contract unless they have the size of Jim Brown, the speed of Chris Johnson, the pass-catching ability of Marshall Faulk, and the elusiveness of Barry Sanders all rolled into one, and
that guy
does not exist.
Man.
Well, I guess Derrick Henry has some of that, but not
Wouldn't
all
Wouldn't
that
guy
of
be
that.
Fun to watch?
No. That guy would be pretty good.
Wow. Can we make that guy in a lab?
So, no, you can do it on Madden. You can make it on Madden.
Yeah, maybe in Madden. Maybe in Madden.
But, Joel, the transition tag, I think we always, every year, talk about the franchise tag, but where did the transition tag come into play? What does it exactly mean? Because that is something that you've brought to the table here that we probably ought to learn more about.
Yeah, it's seldom used because it allows you, it's at a lower number. It's really based on the average of the top 10 salaries at a player's position. By salaries, I mean cap numbers. And the way the tags are calculated is changed. So it's really, it's convoluted. It's over a five-year period and tied to a percentage of the cap, but it doesn't give you any draft choice compensation if you don't match an offer sheet. You only have a right of first refusal. And if you don't match the offer sheet, you don't get a compensatory pick. But what you can do if you think you're going to lose someone is what Miami did a few years ago with Olivier Vernon. They knew that they weren't going to be able to match the offer sheet that was coming from the Giants, so they removed the transition tag, let him become free, and got a compensatory third-round pick. Now, the Titans on the surface have enough cap room where they'd be able to match any offer sheet because they're going to go into it once the top 51 are all said and done, right around $53 million of cap room. If you tag both Tannehill and Derrick Henry, then you're going to take up initially about $35 million of cap space. Not ideal, but you can't do a poison pill of offer sheets, so it's going to be hard for a team really to put together an offer sheet that Tennessee wouldn't want to match. Now, the question is, would they want to match what the dollars are on the offer sheet? Because it would probably be front-loaded because that's really the only thing you can do nowadays, or put it in a way where the guy can get out early so he's making a whole lot of money over the first couple of years than he would have otherwise, kind of like Alex Mack when he got transitioned by Cleveland and Jacksonville put an offer sheet on him that Cleveland ultimately matched that he could get out of a couple of years later.
This is kind of a weird offseason. I don't think I can ever remember an offseason where you have the named quarterbacks that could possibly be out there on the street as free agents. They could actually change teams. I don't think anybody really believes Drew Brees is going to change teams, but guys like Philip Rivers, who's picking up his family and moving him to Florida, or Tom Brady, it seems like, you know, people believe there's a real shot he could actually come out of New England. With that being said, Teddy Bridgewater. What does New Orleans do with him? How much is Ryan Tannehill, in your opinion, a must and there's nothing to discuss? Or how much do you think John Robinson needs to be maybe looking at these other named guys that have had very successful careers as kind of that other option, in your opinion?
Well, it's unusual from the standpoint that there is going to be more supply than demand, because usually it's the reverse with quarterbacks. And then you have guys who could be on the trading block. I suspect that Carolina is going to blow it up and start over with Luke Kuechly retiring, that Cam Newton is elsewhere next year. So that's another option.
Yep.
The availability of other quarterbacks gives the Titans a little more leverage than they would have in a normal year. But if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Brady, I'll believe it when I see it, that he's gone, that he won't remain in New England. I have a hard time seeing him having a big cash grab to go to Miami that is definitely rebuilding this year. And who knows, maybe if they kept all the guys that they ran off, they would have been a wild card team this year. But that would be an interesting one for Tennessee, because all the ties for Tom Brady. Vrabel is his friend. John Robinson has New England roots. But how much gas does a soon-to-be 43-year-old guy, well, 43 by the time next season starts, have in the tank? Because Father Time catches up to everyone, and he was starting to catch up to Brady finally this year.
Joel Corey is with us. And Joel, of course, is a former agent, has a really good feel for how the salary cap works, free agency, et cetera, these contracts. So, Joel, you just kind of laid out the budget that the Titans have to be thinking about when addressing Henry and Tannehill slash quarterback, if it's not Tannehill. Is there enough money in their budget to sign these guys and still have enough for the two other, in my mind, key free agents that they would like to look at, Jack Conklin at right tackle and then Logan Ryan? What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, that may be tough. Offensive linemen who are halfway decent in their prime usually get overpaid in free agency. This is where, in hindsight, maybe the Titans should have rolled the dice on the fifth-year option, which would have been guaranteed for injury initially. It would have been a shade under 12-9 for Jack Conklin, and then you could have pulled it, provided he got through the season healthy before the first day of the league year on March 18th, without any ramifications to it. You'd be free and clear, no obligations. But you saw last year that a guy that was a left tackle in New England, now a right tackle, which is what he played in San Francisco, Trent Brown, became the highest paid tackle in the league. Juwan James got $13.5 million as a right tackle to leave Miami to go to Denver. Conklin bounced back, wasn't quite as good as his rookie year when he was a first-team All-Pro, but still, it was much better than those two injury plague seasons, and the penalties on Sunday don't do anything to dampen what he did the whole year. So he's probably going to be in demand and could price himself out of the of Tennessee. Now, Logan Ryan, you guys should thank Marcus Peters for doing a head-scratching deal. The cornerback market hasn't moved in forever. Basically, the top of the market is 15, and it's been right around that amount for a long, long time. And Marcus Peters signs a three-year deal for $14 million right before the regular season ends, when he got back to playing like he did in Kansas City. So he didn't move the market. The market hasn't moved. So that means Logan Ryan's probably not going to be the guy to take the cornerback market to the next level. But I think if you want to retain him, you're going to have to pay him more than you paid Malcolm Butler, which was the average of a little over $12 million a year with $30 million guarantees. So he's your best corner. Though corners are always in demand if you can play. He had a great playoff, so maybe an either-or proposition between those two.
If you could find a way to break through and make a deal with either Henry or Tannehill, and then you still have one of those tags, a franchise tag or a transition tag, to use, would that be pertinent? Would that be smart to use on either Ryan or Conklin, and what would that do financially?
Yeah, I would try to get Tannehill done first. And by that, when you think about putting a franchise tag on someone, it changes the dynamics of negotiation, because then the agent starts thinking, okay, I'm operating from a minimum of the tag, when we'll say the franchise tag, the non-exclusive one for quarterbacks, is going to be about $27 million. So you start operating as that as a starting point for negotiations. So if you could get Tannehill to do a two-year deal, three-year deal, maybe 2 years and an option, or 2 years and you add a voidable year like some teams have done, or voidable years where you could lower the first-year cap number, that would help in retaining everybody. And really, I think the name that keeps coming up is a potential comp is Alex Smith. That was a deal at $23.5 million a couple of years ago to go to Washington, but it had a lot more guarantees than you'd ever want to do for Tannehill. And if you adjust that for cap inflation, that puts you at about 26 if you adjust per year. If you adjust Tannehill's old deal at 19, $2.5 from, I think, 2015 for cap inflation, that's going to put you right around 26, $27 per year. So if you get him to buy off on something along those lines where maybe the first year is fully guaranteed, half of the second year is fully guaranteed, so you're really making a two-year commitment, and maybe you cosmetically make it longer for bonus proration, then maybe you could keep both of those guys. And I wouldn't be looking to put a franchise tag on Logan Ryan just because the number's too cost prohibitive. That franchise tag for cornerbacks is going to be about $16.5 million. And the transition tag is going to be like 14.3 for offensive linemen. You're talking about 15 for a franchise tag for Jack Conklin. And typically that number is reserved for left tackles.
Talking to Joel Corey, CBS Sports, former sports agent, here with us on Darren Donick and Chase. With Tannehill, do you see this being a thing where obviously the Titans want to get it done as quickly as possible, but is his camp going to wait, see what Dak Prescott gets, if that sets the market to kind of see where he falls into place? And on top of that, what do you think Dak Prescott gets when he finally gets his new deal?
Tannehill played great this year. We don't know whether this year was an outlier or it's the real Ryan Tannehill on a go-forward basis, which is why I'd be more comfortable putting a tag on him and letting him play it out and convincing me that he's the real deal and he's not a one-year wonder, so to speak. But it's apples and oranges between Tannehill and Dak Prescott. If he waits and gets tagged, I expect Dak Prescott to exceed Russell Wilson. And once he gets franchised, Dak Prescott has no incentive to get a deal done until he sees what happens to Patrick Mahomes. Because whether Mahomes wins the Super Bowl or not, he's going to be probably your first $40 million per year player in the NFL. Dak Prescott is not going to leapfrog Patrick Mahomes, in my opinion. But the higher Patrick Mahomes goes, the easier it is for him to distance himself from Russell Wilson, and a rising tide lifts all boats. And if you have the market starting to trend upwards that way, then that's only going to help Tannehill. And maybe that pushes him above Matt Ryan at $30 million per year.
The Titans need pass rush. That's something we've discussed all season long, that they have to upgrade the pass rush. With all the contracts that John Robinson has to do, are there some free agents that are upcoming free agents that will be on the market that you think fit financially and with the scheme of what the Titans are trying to do?
I don't think you're going to be in the high-end pass rush market. Shaquille Barrett's not going anywhere. You won't be able to afford a Jadeveon Clowney. So you really maybe a Mario Addison, who's played in a 4-3-3-4, older guy from Carolina, that seems to get the double-digit sacks, whether he plays 50%, 6%, or 7%. And since he's a little bit older, he's not going to be the most expensive guy in the world.
Joel, appreciate the visit as always. It's going to be an interesting offseason here in Nashville. Thanks for doing this.
Oh, thanks for having me.
All right, that is Joel Corey. CBS Sports does a really good job talking about how do you go about trying to approach this. We'll discuss what some of the things you heard. I thought there was interesting on Derrick Henry and others. We'll do that on the other side. Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Lo Neal will join us at noon. We'll talk about the 49ers in the Super Bowl with Lorenzo Neal, former Titan. Jeff Perlman at 1 o'clock.
That's our plan with Lo Neal, but anytime we have a plan, you never know where it's going to go with Lorenzo Neal.
You don't. You don't know where the preacher's going to take
him. Yeah. The bootleg preacher.
What stood out to you guys? I thought it was pretty interesting, him talking about the transition tag.
Definitely. The transition tag, I think, is something that has to be considered here, and Joel certainly laid out a pretty interesting scenario there. And he did that based on his philosophy of not really paying big money for running backs. So stringing it out year to year using these tags, he thinks is the right way to go. The question is, does that create the friction that you're trying to avoid with, you know, you saw what happened with Le'Veon Bell. I mean, it's a sensitive issue for running backs, right? I mean, if you're sitting there and you're Derrick Henry, you're like, man,
I know.
What do I have to do?
Especially with the workload he gets.
It's not his fault, yeah. But, you know, David Johnson, that's been an awful,
yeah,
awful contract.
Because here's the here, looking at it from both sides, if I'm the Titans, sure, I look at one of the tags, transition tag or, you know, or the franchise tag for Derrick Henry. If I'm Derrick Henry, there's no way in hell I'm signing either one of them. Because I have to strike while the iron's hot, especially with how much they use him. You think that game plan's really going to change? That they're not going to just run it down your throat with Derrick Henry? I don't. Even if they do bring in another running back to try and take some of the workload off of him, you're just going to continue to wear his body down. And if you're Derrick Henry trying to get a payday, then you don't want to shortchange yourself. And so I think that, you know, the tag would obviously do that, and it would be a similar situation with a Le'Veon Bell where he ends up holding out, and nobody wants that.
It just, Joel Corey is looking at it really, I think, the correct way from strictly cap management, smart ways of utilizing the cap, but it's hard because you're dealing with people. Right, we just talked about yesterday, and Mike Vrabel echoed exactly the conversation we had a few hours before his last press conference. Derrick Henry's growth in the whole package, not just a great runner. He's become a great runner, but he's also become a leader, a spokesperson for the team, a guy that sets the example. I mean, those are things that go beyond what you're paying him. So you're dealing with that, right? This is a guy you want to invest in. That might be worth a little extra money, even if it goes outside the box of how teams sign running backs. That's a dilemma, I think. And if you start tagging guys like that, it just, you might lose a little bit of that dedication. It's hard for guys who have such a short window to do it. And I'm not saying just open up the bank and say, here's a blank check. You got to be reasonable. So hopefully both sides can come up with the right thing here.
I thought you laid it out perfectly yesterday, because part of a general manager's thought process in these deals, especially big ones, where it's going to affect other decisions after that, is making sure not only are they the right player on the playing surface, whatever sport you're talking about, are they the right player off the playing surface? And Derrick Henry checks those boxes, right? He's exactly what you're looking for. When it comes to that, I mean, he provides leadership in the room. He goes about his business in a professional manner. He's what you're looking for.
Sure. Total package.
Yeah. So if he checks all the boxes, like Ezekiel Elliott, he didn't check all the boxes, which is why there were so many hairy moments, right? If he was, you know, exactly what you're looking for, it would have been a no-brainer, right? If he did nothing wrong, there wasn't question marks off the field, Dallas would have just signed up and said, we got to bite the bullet. He's our franchise running back, and if we have to pay him $15 million a year, that's what we have to do. No big deal. But because of his history away from the football field, that's what created some. Le'Veon Bell, no different. It was the same deal. In Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
He had some questionable off-season
right.
stuff, off-the-field stuff.
That's the difference, right? That's everything, right? They weren't sure they wanted to invest in him because it could be a bad – there were reasons to think this could be a bad investment. Albert Haynesworth, right? He was the best defensive player in the game. But they were they were wary of opening up the bank – and
well,
giving him the kind of money he was going to take.
On the field, though, the knock on Albert was that he took plays off.
But he had some off-the-field issues, too. The raid, the road rage stuff, there was some stuff. Not anything
right.
that would
There's
be
been
a
stuff.
Deal-breaker, but it would be. It just gave them pause to say, is this
the
guy?
Road rage when he was
I think there was some stuff.
That was,
but I think it was more to do with were you going to get the mileage on the field. But
the whole knock on Albert was if you give him, will he stay motivated? Like the whole thing, right, when they put the franchise tag on him, he was motivated. He came out and he was a force. And that was the thing. They knew that he was chasing, but it was a 1-year deal. And it was a big contract and it was good money, guaranteed. But they were worried that, because Albert had been known to take plays off, and could he stay motivated if he got the big payday?
Right.
Yes, there were some things. There was the stomping on the head incident where he was suspended, and there was the road rage incident, so there was some of that stuff too. But with Derrick Henry, you don't have any of that.
No.
None of that.
And that's one reason. I go back to something that we discussed last week. In this window, if you overpay, which we all know is probably going to happen, and you sign him to a deal where he's making, let's say, $12 million a year, and you're probably going to get 2 good years out of that. The rest would be gravy. But you'll probably get 2 good years out of that contract. If you win a Super Bowl, it doesn't matter. Nobody cares. No, nobody gives a rip about that contract at that point. Same thing for Ryan Tannehill. But the other part of it that you have to look at if you're the Titans, you have 22 guys.
Well, but I don't know if I necessarily buy that. Do you think they give a rip in L.A. about Gurley's contract? They got to the Super Bowl.
They didn't win it, though. If they had won it, it changes. That's what I'm saying.
So just getting to the Super Bowl is not good enough. You have to win it, and then nobody gives a rip?
Yeah, I think so. That's the whole point. You don't play to just get there. You play to win it.
But it's so hard to win it. You got to give yourself a chance to win it every year. That's part of it, too, because you got to hedge your bets a little bit, don't you? You can't put all your eggs into winning the Super Bowl in the next 2 years. You want to try to sustain it if you can.
That's where we're at, though. I mean, Derrick Henry knows the position that he plays, and he knows how he plays it. He's trying to get paid. He's trying to get his one big deal because that's probably all he's going to get. He doesn't play one of these positions that he has a chance at a couple of the big deals. Logan Ryan, he's probably going to get another pretty good deal after the 3-year deal he had here. Tannehill's obviously in a situation to get one. But Derrick Henry, this is just because of the position that he plays, this is the one. So he wants to make it count because he's going to get one shot at it. And if I'm the Titans and I'm the Titans fans, do I get a Super Bowl? That's the question they're asking. But the other part of it is you have to look at, there are 22 contracts that are expiring for this team. You cannot sacrifice the rest of the roster because, as Willie has pointed out so many times on this show, the depth on this roster that John Robinson put together was tremendous, and it helped them a lot down the stretch. So you can't front load 2 guys and then not have room to rebuild the depth, because there are some other names on this list that I would like to see brought back. You obviously want to upgrade, but it's not just Derrick Henry, Ryan Tannehill, Jack Conklin, Logan Ryan. There are going to be some other guys that I think that could really fit and help with this team.
No disrespect to them, but that happens on every roster. Like, those guys you have to be able to replace those guys. Like I said, I don't want that to come off.
Well, you got to pay somebody, Darren.
Sounding bad.
That's what I'm saying.
But those role players, that's what every GM has to do. Like, you can't, quite honestly, it's what we've been talking about on the other side of the highway. You can't always just keep giving everybody, it's great, keeping the core, but there has to be a cutoff where the GM has to replenish those guys with somebody else. And it's no disrespect to them because they did a good job, but you have to be able to find those type of players out there. They're out there. Every team has those type of players, and they don't keep 53. Right. Everybody knows rosters turn over, so you have to be able to replace them. You can't say, well, they're great here. Well, that's fine, I know, but tough decisions means you have to pick and choose. And so if you're picking and choosing role players, unfortunately, they usually go by the wayside. That's how it works.
I think sometimes, too, the role players should understand their position in the universe, and sometimes I think it's smart for the role player to say, I'm probably going to last here longer if I accept my role and I take, because a lot of these 22 contracts, Chase, are guys that aren't going to cost a whole lot to keep.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, you might just throw them a little extra money, but hopefully those guys are like, you know what? Rather than test the market, I work very hard to get this role here. I know how Coach Vrabel is going to use me. I fit. So I'm taking it, rather than risk. Maybe they get a little bit more somewhere else, but then it's a whole unknown. Maybe
right.
It doesn't work out as well there.
Like
I think
Anthony Firkser probably comes back.
Yeah, and he's restricted anyway.
Yeah.
So I think he will be among the easier ones to do that with. The Tajay Sharps and guys like that might get a little – Tajay Sharp is a good example, right? Is the grass greener on the other side?
They're not using him much,
and I think that's the thing. I mean,
and I think that's because they have Adam Humphreys.
That's what I'm saying. I
think
everybody
he might
likes
be
Tajay Sharp. We do. Everybody likes him.
But you're not gonna.
If you lose him, you have to be able to replace guys like that.
Yeah.
Good point. That's what you have to do. That's life in the NFL. It's life in professional sports. You have to. It stinks. Like, we all like Tajay Sharp. We love when he comes on the show. He's a good player.
Yeah.
He's a good role player. You have to be able to replace those guys.
Wesley Woodyard is another one of those guys. I'd love to see him back. He's probably not.
He's a different animal. That's different. Like, that guy is more than just a role. That's a core guy. Like, as in, he helps everybody. Veterans, rookies, young guys. His attitude, what he brings, his experience. It's more than just on the field. He's got a much bigger presence than, you know, no disrespect to Tajay Sharp, but Woodyard's a little bit different. That's a different example.
Everybody in that locker room yesterday, every player sought out Wesley Woodyard to tell him bye.
Yeah. I mean, he's very important.
Says he wants to play.
Yeah, he made no bones about it, right?
That guy is not in the same category. To me, that guy, you keep in. You figure out how to make it work
But what'd you say, though?
Unless it's a bad number.
It's got to be TJ Maxx.
It does. No question.
The money has to be right. He's got to be willing to take less.
And David Long impressed. I mean, that's the thing, that you draft David Long to essentially be his replacement, and David Long has shown that he's up to the challenge. Now, I'm with you.
But when Jayon Brown went down, who was there?
Well, David Long got a lot of the reps.
But also, when guys have gone down, who's been the guy
lumberjack
in there?
He's been in there. And he said, he goes, the Lumberjack's ready for next season. You know, I'm ready to come back wherever that may be. I'm with you. If you can figure out a way, if both sides can agree on something, then you do it.
Here's a prime example. Pruitt, right? He works here, right? It works. What he does.
Yep.
But if you have to make it, this is just along the lines of, this is an example of just kind of what we're talking about. If you have to lose a guy like that, you have to be able to go out and replace a guy like that. That's what I'm saying. Those type of guys are guys that
general
managers.
That's how those guys got here.
Right. That's general managers have to replace those guys. That's how it works. It stinks because it works here, right? But if you have to make tough decisions and he ends up having to be one of the guys that would have to go, you have to be able to replace a guy like that and not sit around and go, oh, boy, what do we do now? Like, you can't do that.
Yeah, I know.
Because 31 other general managers have to make those tough decisions all the time, too.
I just look at it as you have a team that just went to the AFC Championship game. There has to be a balance between improvement and then the continuity, because continuity is important, as we know.
Let me just say this, and I know we're going to get into this a little bit later in the show. I don't know if it's necessarily a good thing to always keep everybody intact for a long period of time.
That's fair, and I know where you're going with that.
I'm just going to leave it at that, you know? I don't know if that's necessarily a good thing.
There's balance between improvement and continuity. That's why I worded it that way. Balance.
Yep.
All right, what is the balance?
We'll come back. Lorenzo Neal's at noon, so we're looking forward to that conversation. We will get into a conversation after Lo Neal, kind of what I just hinted at in the third hour of the program. You're listening to Darren, Donick, and Chase on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
We are back. ESPN 102.5 The Game. Darren, Donick, and Chase. 11:37 is our time. So, we have tried to delve into all of this stuff. And, Chase, you brought up a couple other things, because we're focused a lot on the expiring contracts, which will be, you know, those are urgent. But also part of cap management is thinking ahead to other guys that you would like to lock up before they become unrestricted, right? So you brought up a couple of names that they have to start thinking about.
Two big names.
Right, important guys that you would think are going to get a second contract, ideally.
So March 18th, which is when the new league year begins, that's free agency. That's when teams have to decide if they're going to exercise the fifth-year option. Corey Davis, Adoree Jackson, two first-round picks are going to be eligible for the fifth-year option. Now, as you pointed out, they did not exercise the fifth-year option on Jack Conklin, which you view as a mistake. So are they going to do it with Corey Davis and Adoree Jackson? I think that's a big debate because right now I think Corey Davis, you don't do it. You don't exercise the fifth-year option. Adoree Jackson, I think there's an argument why you should, because he definitely got better as the year went on. He is showing signs that he's climbing in the right direction. But with Corey Davis, I don't know if I like the idea of exercising the fifth-year option. I think you decline it like you did with Jack Conklin and then make him prove it, and then you go from there.
And we said this yesterday, but Darren, remember we were at the web.com thing the day that they announced they were not picking up that option. Of course, hindsight's 20/20, but I do remember really saying I thought it would be worth the gamble. Now, I've been wrong on a lot of stuff, right? I was sitting there going, lock up Mariota if you could get him to take a bargain price, and they look pretty smart for having waited it out. They look like they're going to come out ahead on that. So it's not like everybody has this crystal ball and you're going to get everything right. But I think if you could have a do-over there, that might have been worth the gamble to lock up and know that you had Conklin for one more year. But because it looks like he'll be pretty expensive. Hearing Joel Corey lay out the money that they get, the right tackle position, it's pretty expensive. And it's complicated using the tag because they don't distinguish right tackle from left tackle, right? If you use the tag, it's the top tackles. Left tackles get paid huge, even though he's not, per se, a left tackle. It doesn't matter.
Did you ask him about playing left tackle?
Yeah. I asked him yesterday during availability, is that something that intrigues him of, you know, going into this process that he could potentially sign with the team as a left tackle? And, of course, he said, yeah. I mean, he goes, I think I'm viewed as a right tackle because that's what I've played in the NFL, but I obviously know the position and played it at Michigan State. So that's something that I would look at. And he goes, but I think both positions from a – I forgot exactly how he worded it – monetary, you know, standpoint are pretty good. So, you know, but obviously left tackle. Left, I mean, that's the one.
There's more dough in left tackle.
And remember when he got here, there was that debate. Do you move Taylor Lewan to the right tackle? And Taylor Lewan is like, I'm a left tackle in this league. And, you know, Conklin was up for competition. And so it was definitely something that was discussed. But he's, you know, he's settled in at the right tackle spot. I look at Jack Conklin, and I think he's probably not back. That's just, I think the Titans will make an offer. It'll probably be a good offer. But I think there's another team that will make him a better offer, and I see him leaving. That's just what I think. I could be wrong.
Going back to what you brought up, I don't know how, you know, it's once again, it's back to the tough decisions. I know you invested a first-round pick and a high first-round pick. Those were your two first-round picks. One was 5, one was 25, is that right?
Yes,
off the top of my head. I don't know how Corey Davis right now, to me,
I don't do it.
He's just a guy. I mean, he's good, but he's just.
But you'd like to have him at the right price, I think. I think you'd like to have him.
What's the right price, though? Like, just give me like a ballpark.
Well,
he's not
a guy that you would franchise tag. And this is hard. But
so
they work very hard just to have serviceable wide receiver.
Is he a difference maker?
You can't say that he has been to this point, but he's good. Like, would you take A.J. Brown and Corey Davis? Like, let's go back to Brady, all right? Brady is looking at his options. Would you rather have, because I think you guys already answered the question yesterday, who would you rather throw to, the Titans guys or the Patriots guys?
Titans.
So Corey Davis is part of that equation. He's not great, but he's not bad.
Let me ask you something.
He's good.
If you could only pick one today, and you had to choose only one, would you choose Humphreys or Davis?
They play different positions.
They're not the same position. I'm asking you to choose one.
I think I would take Davis.
Humphreys.
I'm taking Humphreys.
Taking Humphreys.
Who caught more passes this year? Who had more yards?
Well, Humphreys missed.
Right, exactly. Humphreys missed. He missed.
I mean, but Corey Davis has had his injury concerns,
yeah,
too.
But who caught more passes? Who had more yards?
Corey Davis.
They play different positions. Humphreys is a slot guy. You need both guys.
But you have to look at this from a financial standpoint. That's just that they have no choice. He's going to make – the cap hit is a little over $8 million this year for Corey Davis. I don't know what his fifth-year option number would be, but obviously, I think it'll be obviously higher. And then what happens?
That's a good question.
So I don't risk it.
What's the alternative?
Well, by then, I mean the draft.
He's caught 34 exactly. balls, 65 passes, and 43 passes. You can get those guys all. Leagues littered with those guys.
That's
the league is littered with those littered guys. With well, them. Why haven't they been littered with those guys over
43
the years?
43 catches. You can find those guys all over the place. All over the place.
Is Tajay Sharpe better?
No.
That's what I'm saying. Like, who are the guys you're going to go get? You take a roll of the dice with the draft, maybe, but
I'm just saying,
right price.
I mean, A.J. Brown just goes to show you. I mean, that's a second-round
pick.
I think, Khalif,
how many years did they strike out before they got A.J. Brown?
No question.
You know what I'm saying?
I mean,
Steelers have done it as easy to replace.
They've done it better
than
anybody. They just go out, and it's like whatever round they take a receiver, just get ready. That receiver's about to, you know, make it.
I put Corey Davis and
he's
probably
got six
and probably,
touchdowns in his career too.
I thought though in his role he played a significant role. I don't think you just go get anybody
right,
to replace
him. He was the fifth overall pick.
I can't worry about that now. That's history. I can't do anything about that. Both he and Jackson, I would put it in the category of could you do better? Yeah, you could do better, but you could do a lot worse.
You could.
They're pretty good. Now, your expectation level going in for both of those guys, because they're first-round picks, is very high. They have not lived up to those expectations, but they are
who
they are.
Who are you talking about?
Both Jackson and Davis.
Yeah, I'd say right now Jackson's ceiling is higher than Davis.
So are you exercising the fifth year on him?
Yeah.
So you're saying you've seen everything that there is to Corey Davis. You don't think there's another level that he could get to. See, I think that he could have a year where it all comes together and his numbers are better.
I don't know.
Seen 3 years.
I think he could have 3 years. How long did it take Derek Mason before he became a perennial 1,000-yard guy?
Was it because he was getting opportunities? He wasn't getting opportunities.
Different guys.
Corey Davis has been getting opportunities. He's been thrust into the lead role. Derek Mason was a special teams guy.
But different guys go in different paths. That's all I'm saying. I think Corey Davis could have a 1,000-yard season if things go
based
right.
Based on what?
He came close last year, but then he fell off for 600 yards this year.
Because they didn't throw it to him as much. They didn't need to throw it as much. Because they threw the ball less, and A.J. Brown got more, and Derrick Henry got more.
Why did A.J. Brown get more?
Here's what I'll say.
Because he becomes a running back as soon as he catches
it. He's much more of an explosive player than Corey Davis. I mean, that's...
Yes.
It's very simple.
But Corey Davis played his role well. He wasn't the number one guy, but he was a good role player. He was efficient. This was his most efficient season, I think, despite the injuries. I'm just saying, I'm willing to say he's not a number one wide receiver. I'm not worried about that, but he is a contributor at the right price. That's the key, is he willing to accept that role, or does he want to go somewhere else and try to live up to being a number one guy?
I guess I need to know what the price is. What's the price?
That's everything.
I mean, you've
got to negotiate that. Now, the fifth-year option, like you said, for a wide receiver is probably pretty expensive. That's why they turned down Conklin, because he was having issues, right? He had the injury. He didn't have a good year. And so they said, we'll wait and see. And he had a really good year. And now it's like it's going to be costly to keep him.
Which probably means... They won't.
They might lose him.
No, they're probably going to lose him.
So, according to this, and this is 2018, this is Joel Corey that put this out there. at that time, in the first 10 picks, the fifth-year option for a receiver was about $14
million. Yeah, that's steep for what you've gotten for Corey Davis. So I'm not going to tell you
that. That's why I'm not doing it.
But can you come up with a deal that makes sense to avoid that?
Cedric, what's up?
Man, listen, I think I'm with Willie on this one. You got to bring Corey Davis back. You're paying Adam Humphries around $9 million. The guy can't really stay healthy. Corey Davis he's around a 50-catch guy. We know that. But Corey Davis also is the guy who's down the field springing Derrick Henry. So you couple that with his 50 catches, and if you can sign him for $9 million, why wouldn't you bring him back? He's a team guy. He's not a trouble guy. He's long. He's athletic. I mean, he had, 60, 75 yards on Sunday when other guys, weren't producing when we needed them to. I just think there are other intangibles that Corey Davis brings to the table, along with his about 50 catches per year. And if you can sign him for $9 million, I say you absolutely 110% bring him back.
You give him $9 million a year.
Well, you also have a year to figure it out, right? You have him next year no matter what. And then if his value changes, then that's a good problem. But yeah, I think it's just not as easy to replace him, as flawed as he may be, as it might look, I think.
Well, I think the guy that you've got to look at either restructuring or letting go, period, is Darrell Casey. He's $13 million, $3 million in dead cap money, and he's not getting to the quarterback the way that he used to in this system. So, I would be more apt to either restructure him to free up money to go bring in some other guys than to worry about Corey Davis, but that's just me.
Darrell Casey looked pretty good in Baltimore to me.
Yeah, I disagree with that, Cedric. That's
one game, man. I mean,
well, that's a pretty big game.
He's going to the Pro
Bowl. It's a pretty big game. It was one game. It was a divisional game to put him in the AFC Championship game.
At $13 million, you're bringing him back for $13 million? And pull up the rest of his stats and tell me he's worth $13 million.
And he's also worth it in the room, too. If you're going to tell me about Corey Davis blocking, Darrell Casey's worth it in the room.
$13 million is worth it in the room?
Yeah, and his play. You're sloughing off like Darrell Casey's what a has-been.
He's
pretty darn good.
I'm saying he's on the decline. We need to do what Bill Belichick does and let the guys go a year too early, then a year too late for $13 million when we're this close. We can go out and upgrade that position and bring somebody in who is more effective at getting to the quarterback. We need more guys like the guys on the San Francisco 49ers, not 6'2" guys that are 300 pounds that can't get to the quarterback anymore. That's what I'm saying.
Okay, but is Corey Davis ascending?
Could be. He's a lot younger than Darrell Casey.
What?
He's 25 years old, so, I mean, I would think that he is ascending, yes.
Okay, because, I mean, he just descended from year two to year three.
No, he didn't. I thought this was his best year in the role that he played.
Minus 22 catches, sure. And
but it's a different role. 300 yards.
Two touchdowns.
And two touchdowns, but sure. I mean, if you say so.
I thought he had his best year.
Okay. Minus the 300 yards, the 22 catches, and two touchdowns.
Don't just look at the yards. Okay. It's in the context of Derrick Henry became a beast. NFL rushing leader. The ball is in the air less than it ever has been before.
Right.
And A.J. Brown now is a number one guy that had 1,000 yards. So you throw him the ball a lot. Corey Davis, they didn't have to throw it to him that much. He had a nice year as a number two who was a threat. If you leave him alone, he can hurt you. I like to have him. I like his role.
$15 or $16 million?
You guys are fixated and always have been on that he was the fifth pick in the draft. I get it. He's not that.
We have to be fixated on it. It's a reality.
Marcus Mariota was the second overall pick, and look at him.
It doesn't matter.
He's going to be a backup.
At this point, he is who he is, and he's a guy you want to have on your team. If you want to keep having dreams, I've shucked those dreams. Those dreams are gone. He's not going to be Jerry Rice. Okay?
But, Willie, you still have to pay him.
He's going to be a nice player. Yes.
If you pick up the fifth year option. That's what I'm talking about.
No.
That's what this whole conversation is. You have to decide.
That's what we're talking about.
You have to decide. No.
Because it's going to be 15 or 16
million.
But
I would like to sign. I would like to have him be on next year.
We both said no on the fifth-year option.
I agree with that. But I think there is a number that you could throw him to sign him to the next contract without going up to the fifth-year option.
All right, we'll come back and wrap up the second hour of the program in 60 seconds. Thank you, Greg. Lo Neal coming up at high noon back here on Darren, Donick, and Chase. Steven wants to weigh in. What's up?
Hey, guys. Darren, I kind of disagree with you on your take with Corey Davis. I love the year he had. I think he is a product of his environment that he's in. You know, first six games he had Marcus, who clearly wasn't getting the job done, and the backup quarterback comes in. And Tannehill's going to have a greater rapport with A.J. Brown and Firkser and Janu, because that's twos work with twos, ones work with ones. And I'm not saying Tannehill never practiced and ran with Davis in the practices, but a majority of his time was going to be with the A.J. Browns and the Firksers and the Janus, and that was where he had the rapport. That's where he had his comfort level and his trust. You know, any defense that you could have given Marcus leading into this year with multiple coordinators and inconsistent plays and things like that were applicable to Corey Davis. The only difference is Corey couldn't do anything until Marcus got him the ball. There are plenty of games. Look at the first Colts game where Marcus was the quarterback. Corey Davis was running wide open in the secondary, and Marcus was just afraid to let the ball go. I think a whole offseason, a preseason to work with Tannehill to get Arthur Smith to game plan some things for Corey Davis. I think next year Corey Davis is going to have a huge year.
Okay, what's a huge year?
Probably 70 plus or minus 10, you know, about 70 catches, 1,100 yards, 8, 10 TDs.
I'll take it. You want to bet?
Yes, I'll absolutely bet you.
Okay. I'm going to get you, Elijah, to get your email off the air, and we'll make a wager. We'll make a friendly wager, okay?
Absolutely.
Hey, I want to lose. By the way, I want to lose. I hope you're right. I want to lose, but I'm willing to bet you that I'm not going to lose.
I'm not going to go that far, but what I would say is...
All right, Steven, I'm going to put you on hold. Thanks for the call, okay?
Thanks, Steven.
Thanks.
I'm not going to say that's impossible, but I don't think he has to do that for him to be an effective player on a winning team. This offense is predicated on spreading the ball around. They are not a team that has to feed the two top wide receivers. On a given Sunday, any one guy could hurt you. I think that's how they've built it. They have Henry... And then they have A.J. Brown has become their main man. But how did they do it over the year? When they were cooking, Firkser makes a big play. Michael Pruitt makes a nice catch. Davis catches a couple. You see what I'm saying? Humphreys might have a day where he's the man. But I think Davis is in that mix. And he is doing his job. He is a part of a winning team.
Let me say where I dispute what Steven had to say, okay? He kind of point this is the way I took it. You guys can tell me if I'm wrong. I kind of took it as he was more shifting the blame on Mariota. Basically,
he was.
It was more about Mariota and his deficiencies than Corey Davis. Okay, fine. And he makes a good point about twos work with twos and ones. Okay, that's fine. What did Ryan Tannehill do better than anybody in the league? What were the Titans great at this year when Tannehill took over? What were they great at?
Play action pass.
Yep. Okay. What else? What is the one thing we've
red
talked
zone.
Red zone.
Red zone efficiency. They were monsters in the red zone. It's almost absurd what they were able to do. In the NFL, to do that? I mean, we've been sitting here joking about a team that almost could have done this season without a kicker. Unless he just did extra points. I don't even know how you do that in the NFL, but the Titans almost pulled that off. They don't need a guy to go out there and kick field goals because they don't kick field goals.
They did early in the season.
They're
and they
monsters
missed them.
In the red zone. Well, they missed a lot. You're right. Yeah. They only made 8 field goals this year. They played 19 games, and made 9 field goals total. counting postseason, 9 in 19 NFL games, which I didn't even know that was possible, but they did. Ryan Tannehill was a beast in the red zone. They scored a lot of touchdowns in the red zone. Corey Davis is a physical receiver. To me, you know what I would have liked to have seen for a team that were monsters in the red zone? I'd like to see him have more touchdowns.
Yeah.
Agreed.
No.
But if the team had two touchdowns
this year, and yet they were a team that were scoring touchdowns like crazy the minute they got to the red zone, and really Corey Davis had nothing to do with that.
You can't say nothing. Like, he's on the field, right? But if the team is succeeding, he's doing what he's asked, I think. I'd like to see it somewhere in between. I think he could do more than he did this year, and I think he could if that's what the defense gives you. But they were almost dead letter perfect. I'm just saying he carved out a nice role on an offense that was really good in the second half, two-thirds of the season. Really good. So I wouldn't want to mess with that. I just don't think it's easy to replace him. He's got some talent.
Right. And
at the right price. Now, I'm with you. Like, $14 million, a little steep. This what he's giving.
A little steep?
Yeah.
$14 million? A little steep?
Then it'd probably be 15 somewhere. It'd be above 15 for the fifth-year option. That's what this whole thing was do you take the fifth-year option? And I think we all are saying no. Look, if he earns another contract, then fine. But I think you have to make him earn it.
But I think here's what I always bring up. Is like, could you address it now, come to an agreement before next year to say, you know what, I want to have this guy in the fold. I got to have it at the right price.
I'd give Derrick Henry $20 million a year before I gave Corey Davis $14 or $15 million a year.
I'd agree with that.
Derrick Henry $25 million a year before I gave Corey Davis.
I would probably agree with that. But is there Corey Davis willing to accept somewhere in between to say, you know what, I want to give you the security. I want you locked up. I want you to be part of this offense. And if you want to be part of this offense with Derrick Henry and Ryan Tannehill and everybody else that we need to keep, then you need to take this contract.
All right, we'll come back. Hour number 3, we kick off with Lo Neal. That's next on ESPN 102.5 The Game.